welcome to Nothing Ever Happens in Canada. But we know this is simply not true. This is a Canadian podcast about the myths, legends, and just good old stories Canada has to tell. I'm Canadian Girl. Thanks for joining me today. To my lovely Patreons, Jennifer, Jamie, Kevin, Bailey, Chris, the Into the Portal podcast team, Bonnie, and Vanessa, I thank you all so very much for all your support as always. You help keep the lights on over here in the cold, snowy north. Also you out there, my wonderful listeners, I thank you so much for the kind reviews on iTunes that I have received lately. I have been reading them all, and you're all too kind. Just to mention a few, Radio Peach from Great Britain, Blade 45 from the US, J.M. Rockwater from Canada, I thank you all for your kind words. One more small piece of business. Our souvenir shop has a free shipping sale on now until November 17th. The link, of course, will be down below, or you can find it at nothingcanada.com. Joining a Patreon crew of your choice, grabbing a souvenir from the souvenir shop, or leaving a comment or review on the app you're listening to, and most importantly, sharing the show or this episode with everyone you know. All these kind gestures are so valuable and help this show out. I thank you all so much, it means the world to me. Now, for this special Remembrance Day episode here on the channel. I see a bunch of you all brought your poppies today, and if you don't have one, come see me. I have a few extra just in case. Every year, on November 11th, at 11:11 a.m., we all stop for 1 minute across the country and have a moment of silence for all the brave men and women who have served in our armed forces over the years, protecting our rights and freedom. It's because of these brave men and women, we stand so freely in the grocery store line with no fear. We sit with our friends and family and enjoy their company without having to worry. We get to go to sleep every night without the sounds that terrorize other countries on the very same night across the globe. Thanks to the thousands and thousands of men and women who drop everything to protect this country, Canada, that we are so lucky to call home. Today, I want to introduce you to some of the amazing war heroes that are responsible for our freedom, so their stories will live on and are not forgotten. We first meet Ernest Smokey Smith. He was known to be a bit of a troublemaker in his day. Some say it was just he had no fear. Born May 3rd, 1914, Ernest Alvia Smith in New Westminster, BC. At 25 years old, he would join the army on March the 5th, 1940. 3 years later, at age 28, he would find himself in Italy with 1st Canadian Infantry. He would be promoted to corporal and then demoted back to private 9 times. It had a lot to do with that no fear or troublemaker attitude of his. No matter what anyone said about him, he was most certainly a legend in battle. He was known for his fighting and known to fight very well. On October 21st, 1944, Smith and his platoon were sent to help secure an important beachland in northern Italy from the Germans. Soon after securing the land, they were under attack by 3 Mark V Panther tanks and a ton of soldiers heading their way. Without hesitating, Smokey Smith pulled out his anti-tank launcher over his shoulders and walked straight towards the incoming tank. He was about 10 meters or 30 feet away when he stopped and opened fire. He took out the first tank in 1 shot. The Germans were stunned at this man's behavior. Another tank began to approach him when he fired again, damaging the second tank enough that the third began to turn around with the rest of the soldiers, but not before sending 10 soldiers charging towards Smokey Smith to take him out. Smokey didn't even flinch. He dropped his anti-tank launcher, pulled out his Tommy gun, and just opened fire. He stood his ground the whole time, protecting a fallen comrade who had been wounded. He killed 4 of the charging soldiers almost instantly, and the other 6 turned around and ran for their lives the other way. When the Germans were out of sight, he scooped up his fallen comrade and returned with him safely back to his platoon. The entire account of this event in detail can be found in the London Gazette in the December 20th, 1944 edition. For his bravery, he was awarded the Victoria Cross at Buckingham Palace by King George VI. It is considered the highest award for valor in the presence of an enemy. Ernest Smoky Smith was the only private soldier to earn a Victoria Cross in World War II. He would later serve in the Korean War, but because of his celebrity status, he could not be put into combat. In the end, he would receive 4 medals in all for his services. He married a woman named Esther Weston in 1947. They had 2 children, David and Norma Jean. He would work as a recruitment officer in Vancouver until 1964 when he retired. In 1969, he would open a travel company with his wife, and they would run the company together until 1992. In 2000, he was the last living Canadian veteran to have received the Victoria Cross. He would peacefully pass away in Vancouver in 2005, and today his precious medals are kept in a safety deposit box guarded closely by his regiment, the Seaforth Highlanders of Canada. If you are ever near Ottawa, Ontario, there is a beautiful park dedicated to him known as the Ernest Smith Park. Ernest Smoky Smith, we remember you today and your bravery. Next we meet Dr. Jean Flatt Davy, the first Canadian woman doctor in the Canadian Armed Forces. Born in Hamilton, Ontario in 1909, she graduated from the University of Toronto from the Faculty of Medicine in 1936 at 27 years old. During World War II, in 1941, she would join the Canadian Armed Forces as the first woman medical doctor and the first woman to join the medical division. Her first responsibility was to attend to the health of the Royal Canadian Air Force's new women's division. Dr. Jean served on the Royal Canadian Air Force as a squadron leader for a unit that provided medical care. She would hold her position for 4 years and was a key asset to have in the women's division. She would also become a chief medical officer during her career in the Air Force. She would open the door for more women medical doctors being accepted in the armed forces. She would retire from the military in 1945 and go back to working at the Women's College Hospital, which would eventually become affiliated with the University of Toronto as a teaching hospital. In 1958, Dr. Jean would be the first woman to head a teaching hospital in Canada. She would pass away March 13, 1980. I have included a picture of her in the show notes below. Or of course, you can always find the show notes on our website at nothingcanada.com. Let me introduce you to Tommy Prince. He was a part of the Broken Head Ojibwe Nation, and he is the most decorated Indigenous warrior in Canada, earning a total of 11 medals between World War II and the Korean War. Born Thomas George Prince in Petersfield, Manitoba, on October 25, 1915, his parents were Henry and Arabella, or in some stories she was Elizabeth Prince, and they had 11 children. His father was a hunter and a trapper, and he would teach Tommy to be a great marksman and tracker right from the time that Tommy could hold and fire a gun. In Tommy's teenage years, he had a few positions as a laborer. It was around this time that he also joined the Army Cadets. Prince would volunteer for World War II in 1940 and was accepted on June the 3rd. He was quickly placed with the engineers. His duties included breaching fortifications, building roads, bridges, airfields, and much more. In 1942, Prince joined the 1st Canadian Parachute Battalion. Shortly after, himself and a selection of other men were chosen for their knowledge of the outdoors and their backgrounds for the 1st Special Service Forces Unit. They received rigorous training and were often actually shot at during exercises. By the time their training was completed, they were considered to be a very elite squad, specializing in stealth tactics, hand-to-hand combat, mountain climbing, explosives, underwater combat, and anything else badass they may need. They became affectionately nicknamed the Devil's Brigade for their skills. Prince's new nickname was Scout Sergeant, as he was responsible for heading out in front of the pack and would report back with enemy movements. In November 1943, the Devil's Brigade was assigned to a mission in Italy. On February 8, 1944, after winning many victories, the Devil's Brigade found themselves needing their top scout sergeant. Prince would sneak into an abandoned farmhouse that was only about 200 meters or 660 feet from enemy lines. Using 400 meters or 460 feet of telephone wire, he was able to communicate back to his brigade and let them know what was happening. During an exchange of bullets, the telephone wire was hit. Prince, without thinking twice, dressed like a farmer and went out in front of both his camp and in plain sight of enemy lines. He simply tended to his crops like any farmer would, and as he got close enough to the broken phone line, he bent down to tie his shoe and repaired the phone line without anyone noticing. He pulled off the perfect act. Prince then returned to his duties in the abandoned farmhouse. After this feat, he became known as the Prince of the Brigade. The same year, on September 1st, Prince and a private were sent forward to scout out enemy lines. The pair would come across the enemy's camp. They turned back to report their findings when they got caught in the middle of an ongoing battle between the Germans and the French. Prince and the private began sniping the Germans, who would eventually withdraw. When the French leader found Prince and his private, he immediately asked where the rest of the pair's company was. Prince simply pointed to him and his private standing next to him and said, "Here." The French commander was amazed at the pair. He thought there had been 50 other people with them. He said he would write a letter recommending Prince for the War Cross, a French military medal. Prince would then bring his unit back to the enemy's camp. A battle broke out, which resulted in the capture of an entire German battalion. It's estimated about 1,000 men were captured. Even more unbelievable, it said Prince did all this without any real food, water, or sleep for at least 72 hours. And he had trekked over 70 kilometers through rough terrain. Prince would receive the military medal for this, presented to him on February 12, 1945, by King George VI. For his bravery in the field in the abandoned farmhouse, and repairing the broken phone wire. He would then be only one of three to receive a Silver Star, which is an American medal, on April 24th, that same year, from the U.S. General at the time. He is one of only 59 Canadians to have ever received this medal. Prince received his honorable discharge just 2 months later, on June 15th. He would go back to Manitoba and settle down in Winnipeg, where he got married and had 5 children. And started a cleaning business. In 1950, he would enlist again in the Korean War, and is quoted as saying, "As soon as I put my uniform back on, I felt better." He became second in command of his rifle platoon. Unfortunately, his knees began to fail him, and he would have to be hospitalized in May of 1951. For his recovery when he was out, he was on admin duties, which he did not enjoy. He was eager to return to the battlefield and did on October 3, 1952. He was sent back to Korea again. His battalion was sent to secure a location that was under attack. Unfortunately, 4 of his team members were killed and another 9 were wounded, and Prince was one of them. He would recover from his injuries but was hospitalized again shortly after, in early 1953, due to his knees failing him again. Tommy Prince would be awarded 11 medals in total for his acts of bravery. In 1955, he would be called a hero again for saving a man who was drowning at the Alexander Docks in Winnipeg, Manitoba. In 2005, a Canadian Heritage Minute was made for Sergeant Tommy Prince. The link, of course, will be in the show notes below or at nothingcanada.com. He rests today in a military cemetery in Winnipeg. A collection of his medals can be seen at the Manitoba Museum thanks to his nephew, Jim Bear, who was able to rescue them. There is also a monument for him that can be found Kildonan Park in Winnipeg, right near his very famous great-grandfather's monument. Sergeant Tommy Prince, we salute you today for your many accounts of bravery, and thank you. Our next brave lady is Willa Walker, who at just 28 years old became head of the Royal Canadian Air Force Women's Division, all while her husband was locked in a prison camp due to German soldiers, and she was grieving the loss of her child. Let's meet this very brave lady now. Born Wilhelmina McGee in Montreal, Quebec on April 3, 1913, she was one of only four children, to Lieutenant Corporal Alan McGee and Madeline Smith. Her father was a bank president and her mother was originally from St. John, New Brunswick. Willa would marry David Walker, a British captain, on July 27, 1939. David would have to leave for France just 1 year later in 1940. Willa would stay with his parents. In June, while David was in Normandy, his entire division was captured by German soldiers and taken to a prison camp. He would try to escape three times. He would be recaptured every single time. Willa discovered she was pregnant and rushed back to Canada to have the baby in safety. In November 1940, it was a son she named Patrick. Just 3 months later, in February 1941, Patrick would pass away. Heartbroken, Willa decided she wasn't going to stand around and cry. She wanted to help fix things, and in July 1941, when women were finally allowed to enlist, Willa was one of the first. She would graduate in October the same year with the first group of Air Force recruits. Just 3 months later, in January 1942, Willa was put in charge of all the new female recruits in Canada. Just over a year later, in February 1943, she was promoted again, this time to commanding officer of the Women's Division in Canada. She was given the rank of wing officer with this title and was known as the Wing from that day forth to everyone who knew her. Willa was responsible for setting up training facilities all across Canada, as well as recruiting many young women to join and follow in her footsteps. Willa the Wing would go on a trip across the western provinces with Dr. Jean Flatt Davy that we met earlier. The pair would visit 33 bases between Winnipeg and Vancouver Island in just 5 weeks, looking to recruit young women and meeting their parents. Of the 17,000 women who were enlisted, only 2,000 were ever sent overseas. Women were more often kept at the bases here in Canada. Willa the Wing was presented with the Order of the British Empire in London by Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother. Willa was also reunited with her husband David in May of 1945 after the war ended and he was released. The pair would eventually move to St. Andrews, New Brunswick, and would have four sons. There is a wonderful park in Ottawa named after her, called Wing Officer Willa Walker Park. We remember you today. The Wing, Willa Walker. Our final hero for this tale today is the bravest of them all. Meet French-Canadian soldier Leo Major, better known as Rambo, an affectionate nickname he has earned and is well-deserved. Born January 23, 1921 in Montreal, Quebec. Unable to get along with his father at age 14, he would move in with his aunt. He joined the army at 19 years old in 1940. It's said to prove his dear old dad he was somebody to be proud of. He landed on the beaches in Normandy, France during the invasion on June 6, 1944, known as D-Day. Private Major would then take over a German armored vehicle while out on a recon mission by himself. It contained German communications and secret codes they were using. Just days later, he would take out four more German soldiers, but one managed to let a grenade go first, causing Major to lose one eye in the blast. It's said he continued to fight in the war, as he himself insisted over and over to anyone who tried to take him out, he only needed one eye to sight his weapon and do recon missions. In the fall of 1944, in the Battle of Scheldt fought in Zeeland, located in the southern Netherlands, Private Leo Major would capture German soldiers all on his own while again on a recon mission. He was waiting in the rain and started to lose his cool when he spotted the first German soldier. He captured him and used him as bait for the second soldier, but the second soldier went for his gun, but Major was quicker and killed the man right there. Private Major then decided to capture the commanding officer. He did this by killing three soldiers in front of him and demanding his surrender, which the commanding officer did to save himself and his other men. They all surrendered. As the captured German soldiers were marched back through town, German SS troops began shooting at them. After realizing they were captured by a single Canadian soldier, they would kill seven of their own soldiers and injure even more in the altercation. Private Major simply ignored the incoming fire and kept the men moving towards the Canadian front lines. Leo Major captured 93 German soldiers on this day, without any assistance at all. Next, he would save a whole city, that's right, the city of Zoll, which I hope I'm pronouncing properly, located about 100 kilometers east of Amsterdam, was under strong German control in the beginning of April 1945. When Major's commanding officer sent him and Corporal Willie Arsenal on a recon mission after the pair volunteered for it. Once the pair got there, they decided they would take the city themselves. Around midnight that evening, Corporal Arsenal was killed by German gunfire after he mistakenly gave up the pair's position. Private Major was so mad he instantly killed two of the German soldiers who committed the act to his friend. The rest of the German soldiers in the group fled the scene. Major decided he would finish the mission on his own. He grabbed the guns and ammo his comrade had left behind and began to run through the streets, firing his submachine gun, throwing grenades, and making as much noise as he possibly could. The Germans believed they were under attack. At the same time, Leo Major was capturing even more Germans in groups of about 10 at a time. He then would march them back to Canadian troops waiting nearby. He did this about 10 times that night, meaning he again captured around 100 German soldiers by himself this night as well. He would also stumble upon the SS troop headquarters, where he killed four Nazi officers. At 4:30 a.m., Private Major heard the Germans were leaving the city and Zoll was secure, thanks to his amazing bravery throughout the night. He was back at his own camp by 9 a.m. that morning. Private Leo Major was awarded the Distinguished Conduct Medal for this night. Major would turn down this award when it was handed to him, as he felt the soldier handing it over to him was not fit for the job. He would receive his second Distinguished Conduct Medal in the Korean War for the capturing and holding of Hill 355, a strategic piece of land used during the war. As far as I know, he accepted this medal, no problems. Private Leo Major would marry Pauline Crozel, I hope I said that right, and have four children. He would pass away in Longueuil, Quebec on October 12, 2008. He can be found at the Last Post Fund National Field in Pointe-Claire, Quebec. Today, the city of Zoll in Netherlands not only teaches their children each year about their beloved Canadian hero, Leo Major, in their school curriculum. They also have a road named after their hero, Leo Major Lane. The mayor says his story is an important reminder that it is not easy to be free and that it's vulnerable. You have to always think that. Major is the only Canadian to receive 2 Distinguished Conduct Medals in 2 separate wars. Private Leo Major never even told his family of his accomplishments. When asked why, he said he thought they'd never believe him. They found out when an official came from the Netherlands, knocking on their door while on vacation in Canada, to graciously thank their father for his acts of bravery. Private Leo Major, you are not only the city of Zoll's symbol of freedom, you are also ours here in your home country, Canada. You are our Rambo of Quebec, as you are often affectionately referred to, and we salute you this Remembrance Day. Well, those are some badass Canadian war heroes for sure. From spending 3 whole days behind enemy lines hiding in an old farmhouse, to a young woman who set up training camps across the country, a female doctor joining the armed forces for the very first time, breaking records and opening so many doors, to a soldier that they claim had no fear and showed it when he stood right in the face of a tank, and of the man who saved a whole city by himself. These are all amazing and extraordinary stories of bravery and courage. They should never be forgotten. That's why we must remember them for who they were and remember to share their stories often. All these stories are about people like your uncles, aunts, your grandmothers, your grandfathers, and some of us, your great-grandparents. These stories are a part of our history as Canadians and a part of our family members' histories. Though we may not have met any of these brave heroes personally, their actions have affected us all in one way or another. And for that, we salute you and remember you all today. Private Ernest Smokey Smith, Dr. Jean Flat Davy, Sergeant Tommy Prince, The Wing Willa Walker, and Private Leo Major. Remember, no matter where you are, at 11:11 a.m. on November 11th, please stop for a moment of silence for all the brave men and women and animals of our armed forces. And don't forget to wear your poppies. I'm Canadian Girl. Until next time, my friends. At the beginning of this episode, I may have mentioned something about having a Patreon channel with crews for you to join, but I have come to find it was not the best course of action for this show. So if I did mention anything about Patreon, I apologize. That being said, if you do want to support the show, you can do that now in 3 simple ways. The first is the absolute easiest way and means the most. If you could kindly leave us a shiny 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, this small gesture helps our show out so much by allowing us to move around on the podcast charts so we can meet more awesome listeners just like you. The second thing you can do is stop by our souvenir shop where you can pick up episode-themed gear. The shop has everything from t-shirts, sweatshirts, water bottles, cell phone cases, and more. Grab a souvenir today from your favorite adventure to take on your very own. The third and final way to support the show is by donation. We have an amazing PayPal button that you can find right at the top of our webpage at nothingcanada.com. Allows you to donate as much as you want, whenever you want, to the show. That way we can buy a new book for research, new equipment, pay for the show's website. You can find all the links to help support the show in the notes below. I thank you so very much for your support.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.